Welcome. Thanks for doing this interview with Psychopathic Economics. And perhaps we could start with the genesis of the Fortune 100 psychopathy study that you did, if you could tell us some bit about that.
Okay. Well, actually, it was Paul Babiak, Craig Newman, and Robert Hare that got together to do that particular project. I've been working on things subsequent follow-up to that. But the original idea behind the project was... Paul Babiak is a consultant for industrial organizational psychology, comes in and does, you know, consulting work for various corporations. And basically they approached Dr. Babiak because they had some high-level executives that they wanted screened for various reasons. And Dr. Babiak felt like it would be appropriate to also additionally screen for psychopathy in this particular instance as an informative measure.
And as far as how the test was administered,
He gave the psychopathy checklist revised, which is pretty much what's considered the gold standard of psychopathy assessments. And it's about an hour-long interview consisting of a series of items, 20 to be specific. And basically, he administered this standard clinical interview to the various individuals that were kind of up-and-comers for, you know, executive-level positions.
Any interesting stories about any of these tests?
Well, a couple of things that Dr. Babiak discovered is that, you know, individuals were extremely cooperative, very happy to help. One thing we know about individuals high in psychopathy through the literature is they don't think there's anything wrong with them. It's just the rest of the world that's screwed up. So, you know, if they run into problems, it's not their fault, or so they perceive it in their minds. So corporations are, the individuals in the corporation were extremely happy to help, extremely cooperative. And, you know, most of the individuals provided, little in the way of resistance. But one of the fascinating things about the outcome of the research was that individuals who scored high in general in psychopathy were rated as much more effective in their communication skills and their creativity. So these individuals that were actually, we consider to be toxic people, both in society and in corporations, were actually evaluated higher than others in their communication skills and creativity, which I find to be kind of a scary thing.
Yes. And if I remember correctly, did that have something to do with perhaps the manipulation and the callousness?
Yes. So psychopathy is measured by the psychopathy checklist. Breaks into four different aspects. The first aspect is really being a manipulative person, being manipulative or a liar. Second aspect is being callous, kind of a lack of empathy towards others. Third factor is impulsivity, or more specifically, a lack of impulse control. And then the fourth aspect is antisocial behavior, so kind of breaking rules, whether it be social rules or legal rules, that tend to not obey rules, essentially. And so the first two aspects were actually particularly related to positive overall outcomes, in the sense that they were evaluated as more effective leaders, they were evaluated as more effective communicators, more creative. But what these first two aspects giveth, the second two aspects taketh away in the form of actual performance evaluations and their ability to work with other individuals and their actual levels of productivity.
Wow. And as far as the actual numbers and the percentages and the scores, could you tell us a little something about that, perhaps?
Absolutely. Well, so the PCLR can also be broken into a shorter version called the PCLSV, or Psychopathy Checklist Screening Version. And depending on which version you consult, you get anywhere between 4 to 5% of these executives that were interviewed meeting the threshold criteria for being a psychopath. And that's quite frightening, considering in the general population, as a working number, we have about 1% of people walking among us that are psychopathic, maybe 1.5% of men and 0.5% of women. So that's startling, 4 to 5-fold increase. But as I was talking to Dr. Babiak about some of these results, he remarked that none of the CEOs met the threshold for psychopathy. It was really the up-and-comers, vice presidents, senior managers, middle managers that were up and coming that really were kind of had the lion's share of the variance within them. And I have various musings about why that may be that CEOs aren't meeting the threshold of psychopathy. It's not that they don't have any trace of the condition. It's just that perhaps extreme scores get you to a certain point in a corporation, but then you eventually, your reputation catches up with you, is one of my speculations.
Ah, that is very good. And you also mentioned there are other things like narcissism.
Yes. Yeah, in corporations, it's not, all the malevolence doesn't just come from one type of person. There's actually many different ways an individual can be inspired and motivated to do bad things, and many dispositions that lead people to do, you know, fraudulent or negative things for either a corporation or for themselves. And there's actually a cluster of traits that we refer to as the dark triad of personality called Machiavellianism, psychopathy, and narcissism. And these three traits really kind of, they're overlapping in the sense that they're all callous and manipulative, but they're distinct in their unique aspects. For example, Machiavellians, they're liars and they're callous, but they also have a lot of long-term planning. So if you kind of think of the evil melodramatic villain twisting his mustache, hatching a plan to take over the world, that's kind of a Machiavellian type individual. And then the kind of the squealer from Animal Farm, the spokesperson, the guru, that tends to be the narcissist. And then the henchman or the front man kind of engaging everybody and aggressively climbing his way, that's really the psychopath. So when you get these three types of individuals in an organization, you have particularly toxic outcomes because they feed off of each other's unethical behavior.
Ooh, that is something. And interesting, when you say antisocial, I always pictured somebody who is this extremely introverted. Isn't the right way to look at it. It's more of somebody who's willing to break the law and social norms.
Right, and we have to be very clear about that in psychology. I don't think the field has done an excellent job of kind of articulating what we mean by antisocial. So there are two types of offenders in the criminal literature. There are asocial offenders, and then there are antisocial offenders. Asocial offenders are really the type that you were thinking of, the kind of introverted, socially awkward, unable to communicate type of offender, where an antisocial offender really gets along quite well interpersonally, no less than the average person, at least, in their interpersonal skills, levels of extroversion, things like that. It's just they have no regard for rules.
You guys are going to be doing more of these B scans, the business scans, but you're also going to be gearing this in such a way where it's going to large corporations in the future during the hiring. Is that right?
Well, I mean, one of the things that we're gearing towards is to help better equip and inform corporations and other organizations for trying to provide some more information. It's important to note that, you know, the research we do is extremely confidential. Nobody gets fired or disciplined for the kind of research we do. We want to work with corporations to better inform them of where there might be problematic areas. And we really try to work at the departmental level as far as, you know, there's a cluster of red flags in finance, or you're struggling with some personality clashes in HR, and we really want to provide corporations with the tools to flag problematic areas and ultimately deal with people who maybe dispositionally or at the corporate level really don't see the mission of the corporation properly. And we think that this is entirely within the realm of something that can be dealt with, something that can be remedied. As far as diagnosed clinical psychopaths, I'm not entirely sure that there's anything that can be done. There's some treatments, people talk of treatments maybe, but we're really more interested in kind of flagging individuals, helping screen at the entry level. But for the individuals in the corporation, we're not interested in getting anybody fired, essentially. We're interested in working with the corporation to come up with solutions to help with chronic problems. And most corporations have been very eager to do this. And in particular, with our new assessment tool, well, it's actually been around for quite a bit. It's just we've been really putting a lot of rubber to the road lately with the assessment tool called the B-Scan or the Business Scan. And this assessment is written in business language, and it's context appropriate. So these are problematic behaviors that have been observed over almost 20 years of consulting work. that are consistently showing up with individuals who kind of have problematic personalities for the corporate world. And, you know, one or two of these, endorsing one or two of these items is probably helpful in the corporate setting. It's just when you endorse a great deal of them is that it becomes derailing, both for the organization and for the individual. So I have a consultant over in Lincoln, Nebraska, that I speak with, and she was saying that standard personality measures are actually embarrassing to give to some of these CEOs and executives because they're normed either on students or criminal populations or clinical populations. So it's really kind of embarrassing to ask a CEO, you know, do you deal drugs or, you know, do you go to parties and drink a lot? You know, I mean, while they may do that, it's certainly embarrassing to ask with respect to their corporate behavior. So one of the things that the B-Scan does is it's able to assess the same personality traits that we're talking about, but it's able to do so in kind of a language and a context that speaks to the world that these people live in rather than being completely inappropriate and divorced from the actual target audience.
Fascinating. And for the listeners that want to contact you or find out more about all this great work, can you give us some websites that we could put up on our with this piece?
Absolutely. The research, a website that we have that has a load of research on it that really anybody is allowed to participate. We welcome participants. You can find it corporateresearchsolutions.assessment.org.
Secureassessments.org.
And then for anybody interested in talking more directly with Dr. Babiak, his website is secureassessments.com. And Dr. Hare's website is www.hare.org.
Okay.
Yes. And the general website for you know more information about our group's activities and what we do, it would really be corporateresearchsolutions.com.
Okay, great. And did I miss anything that I should have asked?
One project we did on fraud, and we found that individuals, so we had people kind of give us their stories. Over 800 people. I don't know if you'd be interested in this, but one of the things we found was that individuals who were rated as being higher in psychopathy, whether it was by the victim or by somebody who knew the fraudster, didn't matter. Individuals who were fraudsters but high in psychopathy actually were less likely to go through the penal justice system.
Really?
Yeah. So individuals in particular who score high in our corporate assessments tend to get away with their scams more than people who don't, yet they steal more and they cause more trouble.
Really? And is that just because they're more conniving and where...
I think so. I think they're more effective manipulators. And so they're able to deceive other people and essentially escape detection. Now... psychopathy, again, is a syndrome marked by impulsivity. So these individuals, I think, are at some point going to go through the criminal justice system where, say, a personality trait such as somebody who's a Machiavellian is going to detect, avoid detection for quite a long time. I would say one of the fundamental differences between a guy like Bernie Madoff and your average psychopath is that Bernie's really, he has impulse control. Right, so he planned for 20, 30 years. So I would actually argue he's not a psychopath, whereas other individuals who worked underneath him knew what was going on but kind of did his dirty work, kind of fit that description better. And again, this speaks to how I see dark personalities interacting in the workforce. Manipulators manipulate each other to do other types of things.
And then they all feed off of each other, too.
Oh, I think so, yeah. I mean... The biggest thing, though, is that we're just scratching the surface of this. I mean, for the longest time, you know, individuals interested in corporate research and things like that were interested in, you know, finding ways of fostering leadership environment, leadership, or fostering cooperative work environments, or fostering productivity. We're only now beginning to realize how these clinical and personality research can really inform kind of the derailing type of behaviors that we see in corporations now. And never has it been more critical than at this juncture. I mean, there was a recent report saying 43% of all corporations report some major fraud at some point in the past few years. There's a reference for that I can send you. And then, you know, there are research reports estimating anywhere between $160 to $600 billion annually are pumped out of our economy as a result of corporate fraud. People are losing their lives, their livelihoods, essentially, because of these individuals. So I think it's amazing and it's baffling to me that we're only starting now to begin to ask these questions. But,
yeah, that is.
Ever, I suppose.
Yeah, that is interesting. But I guess the whole, you know, the corporation is relatively new, about, you know, 1800s. And I mean, how long ago did they define what a psychopath is?
Well, it wasn't really until Harvey Kleckley and then Robert Hare both kind of fed off each other. And so it was really late 70s, early 80s before we really kind of had any working conceptualization of what a psychopath was. So you're actually right. We're startlingly fast considering
yes.
The history of the organization versus it's a good point.
Really fascinating. I can't thank you enough for your time.
Thank you. And, you know, I hope we stay in touch.